Clean Energy Powering the North and Driving Climate Solutions by Sarah Sibley. Looking back, 2020 exposed many global vulnerabilities, from the COVID-19 pandemic to international economic shutdowns to systemic discrimination and inequities. Underlying and underscoring these fault lines, the ongoing climate crisis and the imperative of international cooperation and collaboration. In the wake of devastating wildfires that raged in Australia and the US, and growing evidence of an alarming rate of Arctic warming, 2020 also brought home the stark implications of climate change across the globe and to Canada's north in particular. Indigenous governments signaled to the rest of the world the high stakes of inaction. In Old Crow, the Vuntut-Gwich'in Council declared a climate emergency in May 2019. 5 months later, the Yukon's territorial government made a similar declaration. Meanwhile, other levels of government elsewhere in the north and around the world are expressing the growing and dire need to protect the environment at all costs. Globally, momentum is growing for countries to reduce their eco-footprint, make better use of sustainable resources and renewable energy through a conduit of international declarations, climate activism, research programs, and government funding. An ambitious agenda. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 7 identified the importance and need for affordable and clean energy for all, while Goal 13 calls for urgent action to combat climate change and its impacts. This agenda is ambitious, with many political, scientific, technological, and social barriers to overcome. In September 2020, Yukon committed to Our Clean Future, a Yukon strategy for climate change, energy, and a green economy. The plan seeks to reduce the territory's dependence on fossil fuels by 2030 and implement reliable, affordable, and renewable energy to continue to power our lives, our work, and our economy, seemingly aligning itself with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Our vision is to come together as leaders to address climate change by building thriving, resilient communities powered by renewable energy and supported by a green economy that protects and restores our natural environment, the report states. The majority of greenhouse gas emissions in Yukon come from transportation, heating, and electricity generation, with transportation creating about 61% of the territory's total emissions. The same data suggests Yukon's greenhouse gas emissions have increased almost 12% between 2009 and 2017, hitting its highest peak in 2011. In 2015, the territory was spending upwards of $200 million a year on fossil fuels, according to a study of the Yukon's fuel supply chain done by Benjamin Ryan, who is now the chief commercial officer at Air North. In 2019, approximately 84% of the electricity generated by Yukon Energy came from renewable projects, most notably through the generation of hydroelectricity. The territory, however, still sees buildings and corporations relying on fossil fuels, such as its liquefied natural gas generating station, in times when demand is peaking and homes need a backup source of power, or when renewable sources are not available. To help meet this need, Yukon Energy rents portable diesel generators to ensure it can provide power in the event of emergency and increase demand for energy during the winter. For the 2020-2021 winter, the corporation is renting 17 portable generators, 7 more than last year because Yukoners are using more electricity than ever before, and that more sources of dependable electricity are needed at the flip of a switch during the winter. The cost of doing so for this winter is approximately $4.1 million. Although Yukon Energy says it plans to introduce new renewable electricity projects in the next 10 years to curb the use of fossil fuels, these generators may still be used for winters to come to fill the gap until a more permanent solution is created. The federal government has invested millions of dollars into different communities in Yukon to help implement green and clean technology projects. Entrepreneurs across the territory have persisted in finding innovative ways to move the energy sector into sometimes uncharted areas that will produce clean technologies for Yukoners to utilize in their everyday lives and, at the same time, help educate them about why shifts in this sector are vital. There's so much opportunity in the North, says Danny Gull, business development manager of Solvest in Yukon. Solvest, a company founded in 2015, focuses on creating solar energy systems for the Yukon and other remote locations, and is leading the way for innovative clean energy solutions. Solvest works on both residential and commercial projects that allow people to tap into solar power to reduce fossil fuel energy consumption. The price of solar, the modules themselves, the equipment, they've all come down so much, and that makes it really economically feasible to do this in communities north of 60, says Gull. The company has taken on the Yukon's biggest solar energy project to date, a solar farm that will strive to see a total of 153 homes powered off of 4,000 solar panels. The panels will be located about 20 minutes outside of Whitehorse and span over approximately 2.6 hectares. Solvest is expecting to break ground this spring, and the company hopes to see it operational before the end of 2021. Gull says the company has already completed a similar project with Fish River Cree Nation in Manitoba. We have such long summer days, in the spring, summer, the fall, that renewable energy, especially photovoltaic solar, is a real affordable option up here. The great thing about something like solar is that there's no moving parts. It can just sit there and produce energy when the sun is shining, says Gull. One person's trash is another entrepreneur's treasure. While Solvest works to harness energy from the sun, another Yukon entrepreneur believes there's an abundance of energy to be found in the Whitehorse Copper Belt. The Whitehorse Copper Mine closed in 1982, leaving behind tons of untouched remnants, byproducts that remain from the process of extracting the copper. Adam Greetham, the president of GroundTrax Environmental Services Incorporated, says the old mine site is ripe with minerals that could be used to help power the territories for years to come. A bonus? It would produce clean energy that could be reused as a way to help replace fossil fuel usage in the territory. Greetham is attempting to turn the mine tailings into energy by burning the high-grade magnetite iron ore powder. He says with the advancement of technologies, metal powders are becoming a feasible and green fuel source, adding that Whitehorse has one of the largest reserves of these powders that is already crushed up in the copper mine. The advantages from the waste minerals from former milling operations at Whitehorse Copper was the production of ultra-high-grade iron ore that's in powdered form, he says. With renewable energy the iron powder provides, it's rechargeable, renewable, and almost an infinite supply of clean energy. A Dutch brewery has seen successes with this clean, recyclable energy source and currently operates using its power for its operations. McGill University has also been trying to determine how feasible this energy form may be through researching the clean technologies it would use and trying to build prototypes. They inject air into the airstream and then, much like sandblasting, there's the fine powder that goes into the airstream. It goes up through the flame to ignite it, and it burns like a torch. It burns extremely hot, Greetham says. The process involves separating the minerals to get the pure magnetite, and then preparing the powder to be burned and using an applicator, like hydrogen or electricity. Much like when you recharge a battery to be used again, you apply the electricity to recharge the iron powder to be used again, says Greetham. He believes this method will also pair well with other renewable energy sources. Using the example of solar energy, Greetham says the power could be burnt over and over again to be reused, and solar could help recharge it. Greetham says he has faced challenges trying to move forward with this project, but he hopes if all goes to plan, it could be operating as an energy source within 3 to 4 years. He says there's a steep curve in learning how to use the new technology and also in trying to explain to different levels of government that the minerals can be extracted and used to create green technologies and energy. You've got to fight for what's right, and so I kept fighting for it, says Greetham. Greetham acquired complete ownership of the site in 2015 and, pending city approval, he plans on extracting the magnetite iron ore, in addition to other byproducts found in the old copper mine, concentrating it, and hoping to make it available for research and development initiatives. Serving the Arctic niche, Stefan Weisenberg takes yet another approach to turning old into new. He founded a clean technology research and development nonprofit called HydroCube, which seeks to inform Northerners about clean energy, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, as well as look into innovative solutions for the North. Weisenberg is currently creating a snowmobile powered by deep fryers with cooking oil as the main fuel source. He says the vehicle will be a biodiesel electric hybrid that has an electric battery that works really well in the cold and in the Arctic. I'm working on the first prototype, which will run on biodiesel, or essentially, it's going to be modified to run on straight vegetable oil, he says. The advantage of going with an electric is basically the biodiesel is charging the battery. The other advantage of dealing with electric is you can use the electric vehicle as a portable generator. He hopes to be able to adapt the snowmobile to run on hydrogen fuel once there is more infrastructure to do so. He thinks hydrogen is the fuel of the future, but says it may take some time before it's used widely, and there's currently not enough emphasis on investing in the technology within the territory. According to a framework released by Natural Resources Canada in December 2020 called Hydrogen Strategy for Canada, Canada has a target of becoming a global leader in hydrogen technologies. Canada does already produce some 3 million tons of hydrogen annually from steam methane reforming, one way of producing hydrogen. The framework says additional work must be done to create more hydrogen through other means, stating Canada has opportunities to capitalize on hydrogen produced from water, which would see a process using renewable energy to help create it, and also by fossil fuels, with measures in place to help minimize carbon emissions. Weisenberg says he strives to help the Arctic niche because communities in the Yukon are underserved when it comes to energy-efficient solutions they can adapt to their own lives. He says products from southern Canada don't consider how products work in different climates or how they might meet the needs of northerners. Nobody's building something for the Arctic trappers, for the people who have a subsistence lifestyle or who want to live that way. So I set out to design something that's different. Weisenberg says the lack of energy literacy in Canada is a barrier that is keeping the industry from reaching its full potential. People want change. I believe that. People want a solution to local air pollution. They want to do something about climate change, he says. They don't know about all these renewable technologies that can help them, whether it's solar, wind, biomass, geothermal, or hydroelectric. And then there's also storage technology. Accessing information and technology can be difficult at times, as some companies want to protect the investments they've made in research and development. That can make it difficult for the general public to access some of the technology, according to Weisenberg. He also believes it's important that people learn how to install and maintain their own eco-friendly alternatives, which is why, in the near future, he hopes to be able to go into communities across Yukon and host workshops to teach these skills. The goal is to enable individuals to understand and make choices about their energy use in a way that's sustainable, and also in a way that helps them, that is affordable, he says. We're dealing with climate change, but we're also dealing with inequalities. A lot of people I know in the Yukon want to do it themselves, and also because they don't have the money to do everything by getting someone to do it all the time. It's extremely expensive to get people out to the communities, if you can get them at all. With ambitious goals set to help bring clean, affordable, and reliable energy to Yukon by 2030, green technologies are spearheading changes to energy infrastructure the territory will hopefully see over the next decade. With the potential to see new technologies introduced in the territory, progress towards the 2030 Sustainable Development Goal on Energy and Yukon's own territorial plan could impact the way people produce, consume, and pay for energy. Living sustainably off the land and ensuring generations to come can prosper is a common concern in the North, and a turn to eco-friendly practices could result in a Yukon that sees these ideals come to the forefront of its climate activism and recovery.